My name is Carlos Pascual, Senior Vice President for Global Energy and International Affairs at IHS Markit. It's a pleasure to welcome you back to the CERAWeek Conversation Series. It's an opportunity for us to have these exclusive conversations with thought leaders in energy, people in industry, government, finance, academia, who are shaping the world way the energy world looks in the midst of the COVID pandemic, in the midst of an energy transition. Today, we have an opportunity to focus on Nigeria and the way that energy is a hedge against the virus and part of the stimulus that will bring Nigeria's economy back. And for this conversation, we have the opportunity to have with us Mele Kyari, the Managing Director of Nigeria's National Petroleum Company. Mele, thank you very much for being with us. Thanks for joining today.
Thank you very much, Carlos. Good to speak to you today.
So today, Mele and I would like to take you through a journey that travels through the context for Nigeria, for what's happened in the world globally over the past week. And from there, we'll come back to Nigeria's situation, the operational issues confronting NNPC, some of the challenges that are facing the government. And we want to close with a statement that Mele wants to offer us about transparency. But Mele, begin with the context. Help our listeners understand, what is the context of COVID in Nigeria today?
Yes, to us as a country, it means a lot because we're a very resource-dependent country. And not only that, oil and gas accounts for 90% of government revenue. So anything that impacts on government revenue, particularly on petroleum, is a huge issue for our country. But of course, the COVID also throws other challenges at us. That is of the health situation of the country, the reaction that we met in as a result of this COVID situation. And the combination of all this is a huge fiscal challenge for our country in an intervention that is unavoidable to make sure that we contain the pandemic's impact on our country. And overall, it is a massive rebalancing that the industry has to do to respond to this situation. So for us as the national oil company, we're at the center of it all. We guarantee government's revenue. We manage the government assets on behalf of the state. And therefore, any adjustment that we make in terms of balancing our expectations, balancing our project, has a direct impact on the entire federation. So for us, COVID is a huge challenge, but it also throws some opportunities at us.
Mele, you've talked about how you've been at the center of it all in Nigeria, but you were also at the center of it all in the past week. Nigeria is a member of OPEC. Your country was involved in the negotiations that took place virtually as part of the OPEC Plus group and with the G20. Can you share with us some of your observations where you were participating as Nigeria's national representative to OPEC?
Yes, the conference participation is structured in such a way that the Minister of State for Petroleum is the spokesperson for our country. But I have also the privilege of being the Nigerian national rep. That means that I was party to the meeting, even though I did not make direct contributions. Of course, our inputs are taken on board in responding to the OPEC Plus engagements. What I saw is a dire situation, an extremely desperate situation for the whole OPEC Plus and the partners, including those partners who are not necessarily on the table during those engagements. It was very clear and obvious that we have a huge stockpile of petroleum across the world. Storages are getting filled up. As a matter of fact, we all understand during the meeting that if we don't do anything, by the end of May, there will be no storage anywhere to put petroleum, and therefore it could almost lead to a total crash of the entire oil and gas industry. That is very clear and obvious to all. And taking an action is very obvious. Irrespective of who participates or who doesn't, you know, we almost ultimately know that we'll end up with a situation of a cut. So cutting the cut of 10 million barrels from the OPEC Plus partners is a natural thing to do. It is unavoidable. And the conversations are in such a way that when do we get this done? Who do we get signed up as quickly as is possible so that we can take the next step? And this was my perception, and we are completely aligned with that. We know that we are doing things to ramp up our production. We have opportunities to bring our production to a level that never happened. As a matter of fact, a week ago, we were able to get to a level that we never did in 3 years to come. But we also know that you can't continue producing if you can't dispose it. We know that now you have to come back from this position to take out the stock so that you can benefit from the revenues that will come from this. So for us, it is a tough decision, But we know it is unavoidable because we also know that if nothing is done, we could end up with 3 million barrels that you cannot take to the market. So that's what I saw. And of course, I also saw the need to bring everybody on the deck, including countries which are traditionally constrained by antitrust considerations, to see the sense in why production has to go down, even if it means some form of curtailment of exports. And this seems to be working. There's nothing on the table to indicate that, but we also know that contribution from non-participants to that platform will make up for the extreme stock that we have, and we'll probably take them out by end of June.
Was it a surprise to see the United States around the table of the G20?
Yes, absolutely, because it's unavoidable. As you're aware, many of the players in the industry have American origin, particularly the major oil companies, and particularly there are companies that will be impacted, particularly companies that produce the shale oil in the United States. Extremely low prices will mean practically shutting down these assets, and therefore, whether if there are no agreements, you know, there's been a natural cut in this supply source coming from the United States. So definitely the United States is an interested party in this without really getting into any agreement on court. But it is obvious that this situation has thrown up a challenge that will make those producers to cut productions. And on the basis of very sheer informed self-interest, and the United States needs to know what is happening, needs to encourage and facilitate this process, even if they don't participate directly. And the outcome of it is that when this stock is brought down, everybody will benefit, including the United States-based companies.
Now, let's bring this inevitability back to Nigeria and the actions that you're taking at the Nigerian National Petroleum Company. Share with us the steps and the measures you're taking on your expenditures, your relationships with your partners.
Yes, our partners are very important to us. We have developed a relationship that will put all the cards on the table, that I will collaborate so that we can make the best decision that is in the best interest of all the businesses. Our partners in the last 8 to 9 months have been engaged, you know, deeply, and we are now completely operating as a single house. And that has given us the opportunity to create a business continuity plan, which brings into context the views of our partners and what we think should happen. And on the basis of that, we agreed that the things that we need to do to continue to run the business in a way that is beneficial to all of us. And secondly, but most importantly, for the companies and our partners to see this as an opportunity for greater collaboration. And the result of that is to see a future where even if we have to take cuts in production, we have to rebalance our projects, shifting forward our project to new debts. You know, it's essentially coming out of a collaborative approach. It's not an enforcement. It is something that we need to do together. And the end result of this is to see a rebound of oil prices, which all of us will benefit from, and also to enable government to readjust its expectations from the oil and gas while maintaining certain basic expectations. And we think that this curtailment that has happened will amount to probably a rebound of about $15 to the barrel. If that happens, and with the scaling down of the expectations of the production level, which by consensus, it means that we can still do many things that the government plans to do in this fiscal year.
Interesting. One of the things that you really underscore is that this has to be an effort of many companies and those companies operating across the world, tying together the interests that you have in Nigeria with the interests that companies may have in other parts of the world, because they're interconnected. I wonder, taking that point and your comment about price, could you share with us, if it's not a problem, what your price outlook is for the rest of the year?
Yes, our price outlook is average of $30 to the barrel for the year at budget level. But we know that bringing into effect this curtailment that we have all agreed to will probably rebound it back by another $15, which can bring us to nearly $5 to the barrel as an average for the year. That would mean that companies can make certain decisions. Some production, some assets can produce at levels lower than that. And therefore, this will enable going forward of many projects that would have ordinarily been scaled down if the price level remains below the 30. So in terms of managing portfolios, every company will look at the what next to do. And our intention is to see how we can sustain many of the projects that are on the table. and possibly also take new FIDs in the light of the adjustment that this situation will bring. For us, we see it as an opportunity. Our partners are aligned on this, and we'll now engage next week probably to see so what's the next step that we need to take, bearing in mind that we're all expecting some form of rebound in prices.
Indeed, an important observation that even though you have these targets, you also have to look at how you optimize within what the market provides you in terms of that price environment. Tell us, Mele, about your workers and what you're doing to keep them safe.
Yes, when we saw this challenge thrown by COVID-19 and the need to lock down to ensure that our workers are safe and healthy, and also to see our country participating in the overall global response to this, the first thing we did is to design a business continuity plan, which means that people can work from home, maintain basic services in the offices, and of course continue to operate our field assets without disruption. So far, this has worked. We haven't seen any disruption to our work. As a matter of fact, our production actually rose within this period, and which means that some efficiency is introduced by even working online. So for us, we have done a number of things to make this work to our advantage. And our workers are at home. They're still at home. We still have an extension of 2 weeks to the lockdown in some cities and across the country. We took several measures to safeguard the health, for instance, giving them all the PPEs that they require to make sure that all basic medical tests are conducted before they go to work. And then we make sure we limit the access of others to them without necessary screening. So overall, we don't have much incidences that is relating to the oil and gas industry today. And I think that the protocols and the procedures in the oil and gas industry, which always put the workers first, has safeguarded us from being that. So we're doing well.
And with the offshore platforms, it's a tight space, a tough environment. How are you managing that?
Yes, the first thing is to screen the workers before they go to the location, which is what we did to make sure that they have some level of comfort that these people are not infected. And there are very many medical ways of doing this, conducting the tests on the individual workers, taking their temperatures, and giving them all the necessary PPEs as they board those platforms. And we also did something, which is to scale down the number of people on those platforms, nearly by 50% in all the assets. And the combination of all this, that we still don't have any reported incidents except one of anyone on the facilities having been infected by the COVID-19 virus.
And indeed, one of the things that NNPC, together with the industry, that what you've done is you've helped set up a fund to address aspects of this crisis. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, we are an industry that is operating within communities. The health and safety of these communities is very important to our business. The COVID-19 obviously has impact on communities. And as a first step, and as an industry, we know that if these communities are not safe, we can't continue to operate on the basis of informed business interests that we know that we need to step forward and do something. And we're also operating in a larger context of a country, which is obviously not shielded from the impact of COVID-19. And combination of these two interests put us forward to say, look, what can we do to support this country in this time of need? And we brought all our partners on the table, upstream, downstream, and the midstream, to see how material support can we give to this country. And as a result of those engagement, we're able to have about $60 million of combined contributions so that we can now bring in materials, kits, build infrastructure, provide logistic materials to the whole of the country, and particularly focus on our operational areas. And of course, we're an industry that is structured around processes and procedures, so we cannot donate cash. And what we did is to quantify the help that all of us can do in terms of material and allow the internal procurement process of these companies to deliver on those promises. And it's working. Many have started delivering on this. So we're aligning this with the overall federal government's plan to bring help and support to the communities. And so far it is working, and we're very confident that this help will be of material value to the country.
That engagement with Foresight in LA seems to be really critical. And one of the things we've seen in the past are challenges in the Niger Delta that you've confronted. Today, is security a challenge or an issue for you in the Niger Delta?
It is a challenge. It's no longer an extreme challenge. We have done many things to create some intervention to bring down the incidences of vandals attacking our facilities, and also people taking advantage of the loose security situation to property things in the environment. And you can see that work out in terms of the sustainability of our production profile. We haven't seen massive fall in our production. The incidences of force majeure in some of our assets have come down significantly. And overall, when we see averages of production well below above what we know 3 years ago to 2 years ago, it's an indication that these security interventions are working. Yes, there are some incidences, but it's no longer of a massive concern. There are still ongoing interventions, but in terms of community engagement and in terms of fiscal intervention by the state to make sure that those instances come to normal. Issue of security in the Niger Delta is, yes, it's a concern, but it's no longer a huge matter for us to deal with.
You raised earlier the significance of energy for Nigeria, its importance for foreign exchange reserves internally within the country. One of the things that Nigeria struggled with for years is to set the right fiscal terms, the right policy guidance from the center. Yesterday, when we spoke, you mentioned to me steps, extraordinary steps that you're seeking to take. Can you share those with us?
Yes, you know, we tried to adjust our fiscal environment in the last 20 years. We were unable to deliver on this, but today we have a structure that will deliver on that properly by end of July. What that will do is to recognize the global fiscal environment. Companies have choice. Today you have oil produced from the unexpected places. You can find almost oil almost nearly everywhere, if you can say that. What that means is if countries would like to see investment in their territories, they must make a competitive fiscal environment. And what we are doing now is to recognize this situation and also come up with a fiscal environment that will be competitive, that will be different from what we have today, so that we can keep our current investors and attract new investors into our environment. And this is simply a matter of managing our taxation, managing our royalty rates, cost recovery processes, and which the law will recognize all these. And by the time we're done with that, you know, you'll see massive investment coming into our country, particularly at the first level. And of course, we also got to improve on the governance issues. There are too many institutions managing the oil and gas industry. This new law will make sure that there's some alignment that will be achieved. So that the streamlining of processes are put in place so that we become a very modern oil and gas industry, which, as you may be aware, the structure we are running today has been there since 1969, and we know that modernity has come. A number of things, the technology has come into play. People have choices that they didn't have 10 years ago. And except you respond to this, you know, you're going to lose out overall. And the indications that we're having from our partners, because we do engage them, even as this process of legislation is going on, is to make sure that it's an industry solution is put on the table that will recognize all parties' views. We're very confident that our structure will change, the fiscal environment will change, and ultimately this country will be the destination for investment.
So one of the things you mentioned was the Petroleum Industry Governance Bill and the broader fiscal policy framework. You see legislation on that being proposed, potentially even being passed by the middle of the summer?
Absolutely. Our target was to deliver that by end of July latest, but unfortunately, the COVID-19 has created some challenges of scheduling. Yes, work is going on, but of course, you know, in lawmaking, there are fiscal contacts that you can avoid, and we know that the COVID-19's lockdown will impact on our scheduling, but we're doing everything possible to recover the schedule and still deliver by the end of July. Worst case scenario, we'll do surely have a new legal framework within the year.
That would be outstanding. I'm sure all of your partners would look at that with great interest, and it would have a massive impact on the way that they see Nigerian investments in the future. Just one more question on the near term and concerning your supply chains and the ability of businesses, small businesses throughout Nigeria that are part of that domestic supply chain and their ability to function. Are the fiscal measures that are being taken strong enough? Will they have the ability to survive this crisis?
Yes, they will, because our legislation will recognize the capacity of individual players to cover their costs and make margin out of it. And of course, you know, small players will require more flexibility, more incentives to produce. Well, you can manage different expectations from large-scale producers. So the law will recognize those situations and respond to it adequately, because we will be rewarding production in the new law, which means that if you produce less, you probably have some balance of costs that will deliver on your obligations and also on the benefits that you will make. So to recognize those situations, the small players will be recognized, and of course also the large players will have the space that they deserve. The other implication of getting this fiscal framework sorted out is having an environment that will work for the midstream and the downstream. There is currently a decision to proceed with a deregulated pricing mechanism for all the white products. All have been deregulated except the premium metals, motor spirit, which we did 2 weeks ago. And that will also be reinforced by the new legislation. We'll recognize it, but we do not need a new regulation to get into that. And we're proceeding with that. And of course, we also focus on the midstream, such that our assets in the midstream, particularly gas processing assets, have the necessary legal framework that will support more development in the midstream asset. And we are looking forward, what we look forward is to have a midstream that will support gas into industry, gas to power, such a way that our country can take advantage of the huge gas resources that we have on ground. So the law is looking at end to end. Yes, we'll maintain production, increase production, make the money from it, but more importantly, we'll enhance actions and activities in the midstream such that, you know, we can have enough power, enough combustion of gas into materials and so on. So we have high expectations, but this is the right time to do this, and the expectations are not really out of place.
To close out this picture, Mally, tell us a little bit about some about the transparency measures that you're taking at NNPC.
Yes, we recognize a huge concern. Of course, they are historical. Maybe we have not communicated enough, but the fact is that everybody thinks NNPC and Nigerian oil and gas industry has a wide scale, has a very opaque situation. We are not transparent. We are not accountable. But that story has changed. We know today that we are the only company in the whole world that will publish its monthly performance and financial report. Nobody does this anywhere in the world. And we know this is a very significant step. And beyond this, NNPC as a company decided to become a partner company for the global EITI. What that means is that, you know, this company will have to disclose its processes, its procedures. It has to disclose everything it's doing to all its stakeholders, particularly its shareholders. And the other thing you may wish to note is that we are the only company, national oil company, that standing for this, except one that is in process. And of all the multinational oil companies that you are aware, only Tong companies sign up to this because that throws extreme responsibility of transparency and accountability to companies that participate in this. The combination of these two is that we are a very different company. We are a company for the future, so that this will enable us to have ability to go outside our shores to do business, to become a global company that people can trust and shareholders can trust. This is our ambition, and we've gone very deep into this, and we're very, very proud as a company that we're doing this.
Kerry, thank you so much for the description that you've given us of the new company that you're trying to build in NNPC. And indeed, you've given us a really unique insight. You've talked about the inevitability of cuts that had to be taken and drove administrative action. But at the same time, you've said that it's fundamental to look at the marketplace and how to optimize those cuts. And indeed, the market never separates itself from our energy world. It's something that we have to keep coming back to and understand the technological and the commercial decisions that you're taking right now in NNPC. We thank you for these insights. Thank you for being such a good partner to us at CERAWeek. It's been a pleasure having this conversation with you.
Thank you very much, Carlos. I deeply appreciate this opportunity to speak to all of you and to the industry. Thank you so much.